We had aimed to address only two areas, three, I think. That's what we had aimed. The one area that we had aimed to look at is the status of the patrol and FL2 of the research vessels and their state of readiness towards OYA, and also the state of readiness towards fishing rights. Those are two. The third one is the fishing harbors. We have four. And aquaculture. And the fifth one talks about the interim relief exemption and the future of such. Yesterday when we met, you know, we spoke about the research and the researcher then had promised that he would provide us with the research brief late afternoon yesterday, or afternoon yesterday. And the challenge practically that I have is that my phone is still not linked on this parliament email. As a result, we are disadvantaged in that regard. I take full responsibility for that, which then calls on me to correct the wrong being that I need to respond promptly on any such proof that comes by. So that members are able to get access to work done by our research team. Members are allowed to comment on that as well. Now, we, as I said, we have those five areas that we'll look at. We'll also agree that we'll be here the whole day. But again, we will not be compelled to be here until, you know, as focused for until 4. We can be here even until earlier than that. It will depend entirely on us as to how far we move with our work. Another area of interest and concern, you know, we received these documents and we had agreed that we should have them a week in advance. For a particular purpose, the purpose being and solely being that of having to prepare ourselves as we go to any meeting. Now, disturbingly so, this morning you read in the local media and you see precisely what is here being quoted at. Mr. Van Dalen, you have been interviewed, of course. You probably even have, you have circulated this to the public. which raises a question as to whether or not you really want to circulate such information ahead of time, because we've been impressing upon the department that they circulate information beforehand, a week in advance, at least. And again, for a sole purpose of having to allow members an opportunity to prepare for a session of this nature. Now, that question is being raised as to the wisdom of us receiving such information, when such information also is to be used for other purposes, not the intended purpose of having to allow members time to prepare for meetings of this nature. So I thought I should make those two comments as we prepare. I saw your hand, Mr. Van Dalen.
Yes, Mr. Chair, on your remarks, you said that you think that I said it. I can promise you I did not send it to the media, this document. Mm. Thank you. So you must look for the culprit somewhere else.
Mr. Stein?
Chairperson, I'm a bit worried about the comment that you now made, because if documents get circulated, I didn't send it, by the way. But if documents get circulated, I send it to people. I've always done it. Because it's not a private or a closed thing, it's something that's in the public domain. I've sent it to stakeholders in the past before meetings, because the stakeholders also help me prepare for the meeting. I've never understood this to be something that we can't send out. And you've just mentioned that it's for the sole purpose of preparing us. Now, something that needs to prepare me, I don't just thank what the department sent me at Coalface. I send it on to stakeholders and ask them, is this the true reflection of your discussions, negotiations, planning, or whatever with the department? Because that is what my role is. And, Chair, I really also need to tell you that basically the same thing happened when we were on oversight. I was kind of fingered as a person that sent something to the media. Just because we seem to have a good relationship with the media doesn't mean that everything that we get, we send to the media. The media have their own ways of finding things, and then they phone us for our comments. If I comment on something, it doesn't mean to say that I've sent it to the media in the first place. So, Chair, I think we need to discuss this. I'm not happy with your comments now.
You want to say something, Mr. Kale? Okay. you see, the line is very thin. The line is very thin because you do not want to preempt a discussion in Parliament by letting the media out there, by letting the public out there, which subsequently gets to be covered by the media, that this is the direction that we're going to be taking. This is the direction that the committee is going to take. You do not want to preempt. All what you want to do when you have a document of this nature, you want to have a committee of parliament or members of that committee being allowed an opportunity to go through and prepare themselves. Now, when you are going to see local media here literally going extensively in out of a document of this nature, to an extent literally going through this document, then you have a challenge, you have a problem. Yes, we have our own right to go through, and nobody stops us, and no amount of media for that matter shall stop us. Right. So I just thought, you know, having just gone through that article, one should make those comments as to how we deal with these issues in future. I think it should be something that you know, we have a discussion on. Because I would want us to really delineate here, and as I said earlier on, the line is very thin. It is members who receive this, and there is no crime at all for members to receive. It is our decision. But as to what happens with the documents outside of us having received them, that's where the question comes in. Granted, you may be relating with whoever as you prepare. Again, there's no crime in that. But for us to be able to say, or rather see, media reporting on the same document and casting aspersions on a number of issues raised here, that we are far from implementing any sailing of the vessel. That's the statement made. I hear you are getting shocked, Ms. Van Dalen. It is not said by you.
No,
unless you want to confirm.
Mr. Chair, I just say that you have said that you assume that I have sent it out, and I think you should withdraw that, because I didn't send it out.
And
there are 15 members in this committee, including you, that could have sent it out.
And I see you getting a bit shocked when I mention that we're still far from sailing. And then you get a bit of a shock in that. Because you were busy, I looked at you and your body language, and I looked at you, and as soon as I mentioned that statement, you know. Anyway, as we said, members, let's find time and just discuss this administrative area that relates to us receiving this document and what then happens thereafter.
Chair, we can do that. I think it's good that we have a discussion, but I don't want to preempt my feelings on this. I've told you, I don't think it's supposed to be a closed thing that only members are supposed to get. This is open public documents. But I would like you to withdraw the assertion that you think that my colleague here sent out the documents to the media. That's what started this discussion in the first place.
There shouldn't be a problem in that. There shouldn't be a problem at all in retracting that statement. But again, this is a point that we need to look into going forward. Welcome, Nkosi. We're only just making a few remarks regarding an article that came in the media on this one before we come ourselves into a meeting. So we are agreed that we need to discuss that going forward as to how do we handle, you know, our documents going forward. Yes, they are public. When we come here, there shouldn't be any problem for anybody to make use of those documents. Are we fine? And I also did apologize, and I take full responsibility for the fact that the research was research brief was distributed yesterday afternoon. I don't know the time, and my only reason, if not an excuse, is that, you know, I usually get them through this gadget, and it is not linked as yet. And I take full responsibility of that one. Okay, members, can we then go ahead and allow the department to take us through the brief that they had prepared for us? Welcome, Acting DDG. Mr. Stevens and your team. The floor is yours.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
So, sorry, just before that, the only one apology that we got was from Mrs. Pilus Miswane. It was a telephonic apology. And again, in the spirit of, you know, our committee, modus operandi, only those that are written that are considered. Thank you.
Sorry, Chief, just on a point of clarity, especially after our discussion yesterday, that this committee is not a weren't sure if we were having an acting DG, and we now have a new DG, and we haven't heard it. I just wanted to check that you say acting DDG officially, so that we just know that. Thank you, Chief.
Okay. We're going to make, you know, points, and we're going to punch, you know, however little the holes are going to be.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you very much for inviting us. I would have hoped to be able to introduce my team, but I want to make an apology first for the outgoing acting Director General, Mr. Mania. It's a cabinet lochotla this week, and is with the is there. Also, I was asked by our Honorable Minister to inform the committee officially that we now have a DG of the department who will start in September. She is Professor Ida de Vries. So the Minister have asked me to just to relay to at least one of the actors are now no more. We have now a permanent Director General. Next to me is Dr. Johan Augustin. He's the Chief Director for Fisheries Research Development and Development. Behind me is Ms. Sue Middleton. She's the Chief Director for Fishery Operations Support. Next to her is Advocate Kosinata Dana. He's not an actor. The chief director had a bereavement in his family, which is the chief director for MCS, which we call basically the issue of compliance. Mr. Dana is standing in for him today. Next to Mr. Dana is Ms. Lindy Bota. She is the acting chief director for finance. Next to Lindy is Mr. Balamani Simoli. He's the director for aquaculture research. Next to him is Lucas Williams, who is the director for harbor management. Honorable members, I want to thank you. And when I start with the presentation for the vessels, I think we've provided that information. But the only disclaimer I want to make is that at the time when we present that information to you, to the time when we come and speak to you, some of those things have changed because it's an ongoing process. I don't want to go. You can go. I don't want to go too much the issue about the vessels. I just want to focus quickly on the vessel management. I think most of you are aware about some of the background. And we can today say that since we've met, we've made significant strides around the repair and the operationalization of the vessels. As indicated to you, that's one part of it. And parallel to the repairs and the operationalization of the vessels, we also have embarked on the tendering process of the management of the vessels. Now, as we said last time, we have entered into a 6-month contract with two specialist companies that are assisting us to get the vessels repaired. We have, as also guided by you last time, we have met with these companies, with their CEOs, to say to them, look, we want commitments in writing about, excuse me, I'm a little bit fluish, about when and how, how much these vessels will cost to be repaired. And we have got a broad idea about how long still it will take. Two of our vessels have been sailing, patrol vessels, Route First, and the Victoria Mthenge. These vessels are basically, why they are not 100% operational now is that SAMHSA have introduced a new requirement of a 2-week training that all our fishery control officers must undergo, which they are busy doing now. It will end on Friday. Basically, how to launch smaller vessels from these two operational. You have to do an additional 2 weeks course, which was something that when we were last with you, that was introduced as a requirement by SAMHSA. So those two vessels are sea ready, and I'll talk if there's any questions about them. The Lilian Ngoi, there is basically a problem with the MTU engines that must be installed. We looking at the end of August. You see, I just want to maybe make also a point. The fact that we are so open and transparent about, because many of you know exactly, if you read today's papers about what these vessels, what is wrong with them, and what is the process around them. We hope in one of the things that we will debate later is the issue about specific dates, but we've given you broad dates when we thought these vessels will be operational. The target operational date for the Lilian Ngoi is the end of September. It's still in the time frame that we set ourselves of the 6 months contract that we entered into. I've spoken about the Route First. That rescue craft course, which has been taking place, in fact, it's ending today, and we will have the final certificate by Friday from SAMHSA. The Sarah Bartman, we had to make a choice between the dry docking. The Sarah Bartman will take about approximately 15 days to replace the valves, and we had to make a choice of putting Sarah first in the dry dock or putting the Afrikaner there. And we thought it would be best to put the Afrikaner in the dry dock. So Sarah, the Afrikaner, we hope to take out of the dry dock by the end of August, and then we'll put the Sarah Bartman in. All of those vessels, Sarah, Afrikaner, Ellen, except, let me just, except Florence McKeezy, will be various times, but closer to end of September, will be ready. We also have met, just in conclusion around the vessels specifically, we've also have met with the industry, with Fish SA, to assure them that all of, and that's the assurance that we can give, that all of the necessary research surveys that must be done will be done on the times that it should be done. We hope to have it done either on Afrikaner, but if not, we've agreed with the industry around an alternative, if not. So, Chairperson, this is basically what I can now say on the repairs of the vessels. The process around the tender, this week we were planning to finalize the tender process. However, we received a letter from the public protector on Monday, which requested us to put it in abeyance until today. She will publish a report. Hopefully, the report will speak to the processes of the last tender. But we can assure the committee, even without seeing that report, we have tightened the procedures and the processes of our tender around this new tender. We have contacted in specialist vessel management experts that guided us on the terms of reference, and also we have engaged with all of the institutions in government around to ensure that that this process is above board, and it's going to be transparent, and it's going to be fair to all of the bidders that are there. I want to rectify one. You see, sometimes this debate, this discussion that you had earlier, sometimes there is some mischief which doesn't inform the public properly. There were only 6 companies that applied for this bid. They were not shortlisted. There's no shortlist that has taken place. All of the 6 companies that has applied has been would have been considered this week if we didn't receive that letter from the public protector. So we hope to finalize this process by the end of the month to award the tender to a successful bidder. Thank you very much. I don't know, Chairperson, if you want me to pause around the vessels or that I should proceed to the other things. I just have to take some water in between.
Well, what I would propose we do, we get the full report, we take notes, and then we'll come later on with questions. Thank you.
Chairperson, we have some extra time today, and seeing that the acting DGG has got the flu, we might give him some time to rest so we can ask the questions. I think it might be better so we can have it in stages. For the health of the acting DGG, it's also very important, you know. but also for our questions. We have specific questions to this, and I think it might get lost if we do it all together. Thank you.
We take notes.
It's a suggestion I'm making. Maybe I get support for it, maybe I don't. Maybe I don't get it from you.
What's the view? You see me as an enemy now, and so I seem to be getting a sense of what you're saying earlier. Anyway, any views, other views? Mrs. Stein?
No, Chair, I think only for the health of the DDG, I would support that we take questions and then we go on like that so that we give him time in between. Otherwise, his voice might not keep up.
Are we fine with that, members? There's no... Mrs. Miller?
No, Chairperson, I'm just checking. Is this presentation too long for us to go through it and finish it and then you take notes? Because to me, this is not too long.
You took 5 minutes.
Can I assist also, because I'm not, some of the information in some of the other presentations is we have presented before, so I'm not even, as you see now, I'm not going through all of the pages. I appreciate the colleagues to worry about my health, but I think I can go through all of them and then we deal with all of the questions together.
I think it will save us more time than we think. We see that you have been patronized as well. Okay.
So thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I want to even start with, because on page 7 of the presentation on the fishing rights, because we basically that other information we have said before, and it's not new. But I want to start with from page 7 onwards, which basically said, after we've extended these, maybe for those that don't know, the end of December, there will be 8 sectors of rights that will become available to reallocate, and we've gone through a process around changing the reviewing the policies that we had. And department, through the comment period, people have requested that they extend the comment period, and we've extended the comment period to the 14th of June. So all the comments that the department received, it was about, if my memory serves me correctly, close to about 400 comments, both written, email comments that we receive in the public meetings. That we've considered most of those comments. We then published the final general policy, including the 8 sector-specific policies, which we then translated into the 4 coastal languages, Afrikaans, isiXhosa, and isiZulu. We then also, as we undertook last time, and we remember that some of you have cautioned me not to make promises, but we were able to simplify the application forms, as we've said. We have simplified the application forms from the 30 pages that they were to between 7 to 10 pages. For the different sectors. We also put an explanatory note and we have 18 venues around the coast which was published in the newspapers. It's also been aired on radio this week where from the 22nd of July till the 16th of August, all prospective applicants were invited to go to those 16 venues to get the forms. We have 2 officials from fisheries at those venues with team leaders who are fluent in all South African languages, to explain to applicants that forms, how to fill the forms in. I know I was contacted by some honorable members in some areas. They were confusion around the forms. We then contacted our team leaders because people were not clear. I was contacting Elandsbaai and PE about those forms. But as we said today, we are confident that none of the potential applicants should require to go to a consultant or to a lawyer to fill in those forms. We are not going to fill in the forms on behalf of people, but our officials are on standby to assist people. Our officials are getting regular training to update them about the questions that are there. And this stuff, all of this were, as unlike some people claim that they didn't know, it was published in most of the newspapers in South Africa, and it was gazetted. And we, as I said, we have now a radio advert in the coast, not only in the coast, but in some of, I think it's about 16 radio stations that we advertise. Page 8 gives you it says 15, but in fact it's 18 distribution centers. So just note which ones are not, which are not there. We also have a helpline, which is page 9, where people can ask if they are not at the center, are not clarified, they can call the helpline to get assistance. We also, as we've said last time, were able now to ensure that there's greater access for the opportunity to apply, that there will be no application fee is required to apply for these specific fishing rights in any of these sectors. After Friday, tomorrow, Friday is the 16th, there will be a period where from the 2nd of September to the 13th of September, applications can be submitted at the same venues. One thing I must also just inform you, at all of these venues, we have independent auditor firm, which basically ensures that the number of forms that goes out, each of these forms have a specific reference number, so that we have a record, and there's also independent verification to ensure that our officials are managing and handling these things in a fair and equitable way. So from the 2nd of September to the 13th of September, we want you also to assist to inform communities or potential applicants that they can submit their forms during that period of time. Some of these distribution centers was also opened on Saturdays. There was two Saturdays in this period that we were opened to ensure that people were at sea were able to attend or to be able to apply. Yes, I've spoken. The verification team, which is led by an independent auditing company, will also be responsible for verifying the accuracy of the information submitted by applicants and for setting up and handling an anonymous top of line around, and that is going to be independent from us. If required, They will also do detailed investigations to prevent people to front, to ensure that your applicants that their names are not used to apply for these rights. So we have a number of mechanisms in place to prevent it from happening. The second process, after the applications have been received, there will be a list drawn up of all of the applications for the specific rights, and we will also establish an independent assessment panel, which will then recommend who must get which rights from which areas and so on. That basically the delegate authority appointed by the minister will be responsible for taking the final decisions in the allocation of the fishing rights. All fishing rights must be allocated by the 31st of December. Any appeal received will be processed and submitted to the minister for decisions. we trust that this process, ladies and gentlemen, will and honourable members, will stand the test of time of its transparency. And we, in addition to this, we also are contacting specific stakeholder organisations just to inform them about this process. Unfortunately, if you by Friday 4 o'clock, if you have not received a form or you have not gone to fetch a form, you will not be allowed to apply. You cannot apply for any of these rights that is available. Is it Thursday today? Yeah, tomorrow. Sorry. The proclaimed fishing harbors, in page 2, there are 12 proclaimed fishing harbors. One is Lamberts Bay, Lieplek, St. Helena Bay, Saldanha Bay, Hout Bay, Hermanus, Kalk Bay, Gordons Bay, Arniston, Gans Bay, Strays Bay, and Still Bay. All of these fishing harbors is in the Western Cape. The National Department of Public Works is the custodian of the fishing harbors, and they are responsible for the infrastructure maintenance and repairs in terms of the government immovable asset management act. In terms of our legislation, the MRA, the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fish is responsible for the day-to-day management of the fishing harbors in terms of the harbor regulations, which is section 88 to 95. In 2005, due to the fragmented management of the harbors, the ministers of public works in at that time, the Minister of Environmental Affairs and Tourism, approached cabinet to propose a new management model for the 12 fishing harbors. It was also decided that to improve coordination, a joint harbor steering committee would be established with DEED at that time, now DEF, to play a leading role. We appointed ENY in 2008 to do a feasibility study on the fishing harbors. The study was concluded in 2008 with recommendations, and the Joint Harbor Steering Committee convenes monthly and is still currently responsible for the interim management of the harbors. For us to finalize the institutional arrangement for the fishing harbors, the following additional committees were established: an interministerial committee to provide guidance and political leadership on this process, and a joint working committee with the National Treasury as to the driver to investigate the most appropriate management model. we will also soon advertise for harbor masters in some of the key harbor harbors. We are just waiting final HR approval. We're also going to appoint one of the issues which is raised in the report is the Occupational Health and Safety Act in some of these harbors, and we are going to appoint a occupational health and safety officer that will deal with some of those things. We have there is some issues around security, vandalism, petty theft, organized crime, and we have a EPWP project which employ about close to so about 600 people in some of these 12 harbors. It will be which looks at some of these issues around security, basic day-to-day management and maintenance in the harbors. The status of the aquaculture hatcheries farms in South Africa. I'm not going to bore you with all of the details. There are 31 marine aquaculture farms which are currently fully operational, and those are the species that we, which of those farms and where they are, in which provinces they are. Abalone, finfish, mussels, oysters, ornamentals, and the majority of them are in the Western Cape. Of the 31 farms, 4 are government-funded farms and are fully operational. More farms will get support through aquaculture, the partnership that we have with DTI, the Aquaculture Development Enhancement Program, the MOU that we have signed with DTI. There are 16 marine aquaculture hatcheries, 31 farms, 16 marine aquaculture hatcheries in operation. As you've seen again, most of it is in the Western Cape, and it is the similar species that we're talking about, the provision of spat to those farms. We have one government-funded marine hatchery in the Western Cape, which is basically based in Sea Point, which is managed by ourselves. We have 161 freshwater aquaculture farms which are operational. And I see in Mpumalanga we have the most, 42 of it. And then Western Cape and Gauteng. There are 30 government-funded freshwater aquaculture farms in operation, and there are 18 in Limpopo and 6 in Free State. We have 8 government freshwater farms which are not 100% operational, which is in Mpumalanga. Most of it is in Mpumalanga. 55 freshwater aquaculture hatcheries in South Africa. Most of it is in Gauteng. And then we have 6 government-funded hatcheries in South Africa in operation. It is in Limpopo the most. Lastly, we have 11 government-funded freshwater hatcheries in South Africa, which is not operational yet. All of those details, some of my colleagues would if there's any questions about it, we'll assist in answering. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would reckon there will be lots of notes that will be made. We are open to see if we can answer some of those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens. There is no addition from any other of your colleagues, am I right? In the absence of any members, that is a brief on the vessels, right allocation, and also the aquaculture. You shall also have received the proof from the research. Okay. I see Mr. Van Dalen. Go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I feel it very much at a disadvantage because we received these, like you said, these form this paperwork on the research, right as we spoke. I had to listen to the presentation and all three, obviously, and make notes of it as well. So I wonder if we can't maybe just ask questions on the vessels first and then ask the questions in... it's a lot of information to digest, and there's a lot of questions. So I just want to know how much time do we have to ask these questions.
We have until 4:00.
Yeah, so maybe if we could just slow it a little down so we can maybe read these documents.
Get on to your question.
Say again, get on to my
question. Get on
to
your question, yes. Thank you.
Yes, my question would be on the vessels, and I would like to know, you have said that you know what it's going to cost us to have them repaired more or less in the 6 months contract that has been awarded to Damen and to Nautic Africa. Can you share with us what that ballpark figure of that cost will be? And then you've also said that the Ruthfirst and the Victoria Jenge is operational, and they're only waiting for SAMHSA certification to leave the harbor. Now we have a national disaster that is happening in Knysna, and usually when national disasters happen, people make exceptions, and these two ships are some of the vessels that have the only environmental protection and oil slick fighting capabilities. And that is what we are needing at the moment in Knysna. Everybody is there except for those vessels that should be there. So we are open to a major disaster if that oil goes places where it shouldn't go. And we also have the added problem that it's pristine area that is marine protected areas, and there's a lot of fish and birds that might die in the process when all this 330 tons of oil will be spilled in the sea. You know, imagine what would happen if an oil tanker would what would we then do? Would we still say, well, we have these ships, they're sitting in the harbor, but we're waiting for a piece of paper to protect our fish? It just doesn't sound right. It sounds to me, you know, like maybe it's just another excuse why these ships don't go out. I just can't understand it. I just can't fathom the reason for that. Then you have said that you have received a letter from the public protector, and that letter asks you to hold on to the process at the moment. That letter also states that they actually ask you to exclude Sekonyalo from the tender process, if I read the media correctly. I must tell you, I haven't seen that public protector's report, and I'm actually quite surprised about it, because I was the one that laid the charge with the public protector, and I would have thought that I would have had sight of that report already. So I don't know. I'm very... I'm
disadvantaged, that's the English word.
Yeah, I would like to know what's in that report. I'm dying to know.
It's coming.
So, and then I also wanted to know, this new contract that you are putting out, what is the worth of the, what is the worth of that contract? Is it close to what it was before? Is it cheaper? Is it less expensive? Because what the minister has also said is that Smit & Mandla was overcharging the department. So if the contract is now more than 800 million rand, then I would think that there is a big problem. Because if Smit & Mandla was charging 800 million rand or 400 million rand, whatever their contract was at the time, and the minister had said that they were overcharging us and they were stealing the money and they were
She made all sorts of utterances here about fronting and corruption of 2 billion rand. Then I would like to know how much this contract is going to be for the next 5 years, because, I mean, that would give me an indication if that is the truth or not, if the minister misled us or not. So you must be very careful when you answer that. But it's a genuine question and a concern that I have. So now we go on to the application forms, the rights applications, and then you said that these application forms were simplified. To me, they look like exactly the same forms that went out 5 years ago. I went to fetch some myself because I want to go through the process to see what the poor fisherman has to go through. And so I went to this your main office here in Fort Trust Building, and I gave them my ID. They would only give me 4 because they said I would only qualify for 4 of these rights that had to be allocated. And you are right, there's a number on it. They take down your number. And then I ask them, you know, where's the Afrikaans one? They tell me there's no one in Afrikaans. So you have said that you have translated it in 4 languages. It's also not correct. These are English forms. Most of our fishermen are Afrikaans. And they have, for their whole life, lived there until, have been catching fish until the English came to Cape Town. So now, I mean, we have it in English, and these people just don't know English. I mean, they really don't have the education to fill in these forms. And then you say, well, everybody is allowed to help them. When I asked them for help, they told me, well, I have to phone a number, which is on a form which they said I could get in different languages, and the helpline form, but the helpline, nobody could get a hold of them. I tried a couple of times to phone them. It was just not available. So there goes that problem. Then you have said that also on these forms, there's no closing date on it for this allocation. Nowhere could I find any closing date when this has to be in. No dates are mentioned, so it's an open process. And if somebody would challenge you on it, they would actually be able to put it in a year's time and also ask for the same rights to be allocated again. Because, I mean, when I asked them for it, they said, well, you know, they will come and pick up the forms in the 2nd to the 14th of September. And that was supposed to be sufficient, but there's no closing date on there. Then there was another problem that these forms are out and you're asking for applications and people should apply for them, and it's there to support the small-scale fishers and everybody else. And we have also heard in the media that the cabinet has approved the amendments to the MLRA, because you can't allocate these rights if the MLRA is not amended, if I'm correct. Otherwise, either I am or you are confusing two different processes, and I don't know if that is intentional or not. But it's not been through Parliament. The MLRA is still on its way to Parliament, where we will deal with it, and where the small-scale fishing policy will then be incorporated into the MLRA, if I understand it correctly. But you might tell me I don't understand it, so that's also okay. Then the public participation process, this was discussed. I went to one. It was in a hotel here in Cape Town.
So that's your last one, and then you can always come for the
Can we have a second
round.
Bite? Okay.
Yeah.
Then I went.
We have until 4.
Yeah, I'm just afraid you say, well, we're all finished now. You know, I'm with the opposition. I'm not in the ruling party making the rules. I have to take my chances where I can. So then there was the public participation process that was going on, where everybody was informed about what was going on. And then the people were complaining that they couldn't understand what was going on, so I had to fight for it to be said in Khoza all over again. Mr. Fredericks was there. I think it's not Mr. Fredericks. He was the one that was there. I thought it was you. Sorry. You look the same, I think. But it's an honest mistake. But there was a big fight about, he wanted to throw me out of the meeting because I was unruly for him to ask that the thing was, that it was translated into Khoza, and he thought it was not, the people didn't have to know because the paperwork would come out in Khoza afterwards, and it was just very silly how that process went. So the public participation process, I would submit, was not very good. And it was very one-dimensional. I struggled to understand what was going on there. So it just fathoms how the people, and I can think how the poor people that are only used to fishing will understand it if I can't even understand it. Those are my questions. Why was that process not done in Khoza all over? Those are questions I have first. Thank you.
Any further questions? Welcome, Mr. Abram and Mama Nyalungo. Any further questions, Mrs. Stay?
Thank you, Chairperson. The one that I wanted to, I'm not going to ask some of the same questions that were covered here, but I wanted to check, Chair. It says here that the application process receipting process, I assume that's when you have to take back your application forms, will only be open from 2 to September to 13 September. I'm not sure if this is on the fishing rights or what is that, what application or receipt is that, fishing rights allocation. It said, it was mentioned that it's closing yesterday now. So you can only get your applications until tomorrow, but then it must be handed in that week of September. Why is that that time frame so short when people must bring it back? If someone is in hospital, I'm not sure. I haven't been to this office. Unfortunately, I couldn't go with him. But why is that process so short? Do you yourself have to take it back, or can someone take it back on your behalf? What happens if someone can't do it in that time frame? If someone can answer me on that one. And then, Chairperson, I'm also really very concerned about this, the boats that is not available to kind of go and assist with this stranded boat for the oil spill. I also want to know, if they are ready, what is the thing that holds us back with SAMHSA? Is it because maybe the crew is also not ready and trained? I've read through here, there's processes and time frames. The crew are actually only being trained now, it looks to me. Don't you have some or other plan B in place like you did with research that was supposed to happen, that where the private sector assisted you with that? Is something in place like that? I wanted to check with you. And then, Chair, I think I'll also leave my other questions for the other issues for a bit later. Thank you.
Welcome, Mr. Bong. The floor is yours, sir.
The first one, I've tried to read throughout the night, even yesterday, this presentation, and I don't want to use this word ready, because to me, Chairperson, it's last year, we were told that some of these vessels are ready. Within 2 weeks or a month, that they will be ready and be safe. Some of the problems were still there of these vessels. The technicalities in terms of these vessels sailing. Now, I'm not sure really that I can trust the fact that the vessels were being told that are ready and are going to sail. Like, I wanted also to check, for instance, if we take the Lilian Ngui, amongst other problems that were mentioned, that since April 2012, there were engine problems in terms of servicing. Now, that you are working on to that, and also the Victorian Quank, for instance. Even last year, some of the technical problems were still there. But even Victorian Quank, you are also raising the issue of engine services. what is it that makes you unable to, if these vessels have technical service problems, that they are serviced at the same time, that you should wait, the other one would have its own process of servicing, and the other one would have its own, what is it that makes that? And I must say that really, Chairperson, this plan of and promise, I don't trust it. To be honest with you, the doctor was here last year. He raised the same question. The naval forces raised the same thing, and it's unfortunate that they are saying by September they will be ready. And I must be convinced by some miracle that these things will be ready. But the last question that I want to ask, what impact this vessel for this long period of time until the promised land of them sailing have they made to the fishing environment into South Africa? Like, let's talk about research, those who are doing research like the Afrikaner. What negative impact that you can tell us, just be very open to us and say, what is it that they've made, the patrol vessels, the dangers they've put into? Because nobody is telling us about the delays in these vessels sailing to the impact of the fishing environment into South Africa. Therefore, I'm very interested to know that kind of an information. Thank you, Chair. Maybe I'll come.
For sure, you know, we had scheduled to be here until 4. So we certainly have another round that we can go through. And obviously, we will not have to invent, you know, if we cannot go on anymore. You know, it shall not be a crime. The first one I have, if I were to come in as well, you know, I did call you, Mr. Stevens, on the simplified or the simplification of the forms to an extent that, you know, you get calls from people asking a question as to where can they get help. And another experienced group, you know, they were indicating, you know, to me that, you know, they will also make use of a lawyer, not a lawyer, an accountant that they shall have been making use of over the years. this is a group in Durban. Which points to me a simple factor that still says the forms are not simplified. To an extent that because you want to cut out the middle person, because that's where some of these costs, you know, for any person, and you can imagine a new entrant obviously will be lost in this process. And again, consultant will be. The second one that I want to look into is the transgressor. The transgressor, you mentioned somewhere, or it is mentioned somewhere in the research paper here, that talks about a process of having to, I think it is in your paper presentation, but there is somewhere where there is mentioning of, you know, some of the assessment or other performance appraisals that you shall have been engaged in. I think they were concluded sometime last year. And the difficulty that we have is that these processes, you go ahead and do them out there on your own. Maybe they have got some sensitivities to them. But now, How do we get to know, as we do our oversight work, whether, as you shall have done on your own, your performance appraisal? We are not privy to that information. But there's going to be a number of those that apply. We're not going to be worried about, you know, interference with your own administrative, internal, and so on and so forth. But part of our work here talks pretty much to a need for us to do our oversight work. Those that, save for one that we all know, which is Kalahari, what about those other transgressors? We also have a scenario where in this industry there's lots and lots of fronting that takes place, which is criminal, and fraud, equally criminal. Now, how do we get to know as to this one is a transgressor and that one is not a transgressor? The last one, I see somewhere here you are saying there is a room to improve in terms of all these aquaculture projects for eastern or rather, eastern sea waters, that is Indian Ocean, so to speak. Would it have been deliberate that only you start and you focus on Western Cape, not having to be able to do all those, you know, at the same time in all these other areas? Because the perception out there is that, you know, fishing is a Western Cape thing. And to an extent, you know, even the Western Cape government now just wants to have it, you know, here all the time as we pursue an argument that says have all the department branches in one office in Pretoria. You hear, you know, rumblings, you know, no, this one must be here. Even within the branch itself, something that we've been calling for all the time, that have one department and one head office in one area, so that you don't have, a finance person, you know, in the fisheries branch, head office, communication person, fisheries branch, head office, legal, fisheries, department's office, which is duplication as far as I'm concerned. Granted, you might wish to say, you know, the fund, Marine Living Resource Fund, could be an issue here. Management of such a fund. Again, you know, these laws are created by human beings. They get changed by human beings for a specific reason that seeks to say consolidate rather than continue in this fragmented fashion that things have been going on as we speak now. You want to allow everybody else to say? Okay.
No, it's not on the second by chair. I was just looking for that slide when I asked my question and I couldn't find it at that stage, but I found it now. On slide 7, chair, my question regarding the boats that could not go and assist with the stranded boat, the IPVs. It says here on slide 7, the final SAMHSA survey is still outstanding to be completed by 9 August, but we are past 9 August as far as I'm aware. I think it was Women's Day on 9th August. So why are they not there? It's in this note. So 9 August is past, so what are we waiting for?
Okay, can I say something here, members, just very briefly, regarding that situation where there's a spillage of oil? I would propose that we take an approach that begins to seek for a collaboration in dealing with situations of that nature. They are not happening for the first time. We've had a scenario here in Cape Town, I think sometime beginning of the year. But we continue to work in a fragmented fashion in approaching these issues. Can I propose that we have a session that is dedicated to this specific one? That will bring along your transport committee, that has got SAMHSA in it, trade and industry, environment, and ourselves. And then, of course, SALGA and the law enforcement agencies. Now, the intention there, as we speak now, only your Environment Management Act that comes into play and the penalties thereof in dealing with situations of that nature. The intention must be about making sure that in future there is, because the penalty method out of that situation, you know, it's literally, if you like, petty cash for some of these companies that are multi-million. So they can really continue with business as usual for them. But until we find ourselves as committees of parliament to really, you know, as part of our oversight responsibility, call on government departments to work together in dealing to an extent wherein, I mean, if these boats are going to be sailing, will they be in a condition that they can sail? And what causes those spillages? And after all, will they have been, as I said, in a position to sail going through? Now these are the issues that we would really have to deal with. But I would really wish us that we put aside time specifically on this one and collaboratively deal with these issues. Mr. Abram, are you on the same issue?
Yeah, partly, sir, and I have a couple of questions.
Because what I wanted to say to do, members, if you don't mind, Mr. Abram, we allow the department just on this one round and then come back with the second round.
Yeah, I just wanted to help you with what you were saying.
Before you help. Before you support. Let's allow the department to come through in responses, and then we shall come with our second round before they themselves get lost. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. Thank you very much for those questions. Let me start with a little bit of a context about the oil spill issue. The mandate of dealing with those are the Department of Environmental Affairs and SAMHSA. What we have said since we've been here with you last, our two vessels are ready to go to sea. But you don't want us or myself to break the law. If SAMHSA says there's a new, let me emphasize, it's not something that was there before. There's a new compulsory SAMHSA course that we must, and it's nothing to do with the vessel. It is when we have rescue craft on our vessels. This is a new introduction that they brought to say, or for inspections, for rescues or inspections, that the crew that is on that vessel must go to this 2 weeks compulsory course. And before that vessel can sail, they must give us a certificate to say this crew has gone on this compulsory course. So that two vessels, honorable members, honorable chairperson, are ready to sail. Now the mandate of dealing with oil spills is with DIA and with SAMHSA. What we jointly do, convened by the Department of Environmental Affairs, if something like that happened, is to call all of us. And then we, in the memorandum of agreement that we have, there's a specific clause that deals with this issue, how we assist around it. We are more keen than you for us to have the paper to go to see on these two vessels. There's nothing about engines, Honorable Member Banga. Those vessels are repaired. We need that paper to go to sea. And we would be of more willing to go and assist around that oil spill, because that is what our agreement is with DIA. So with those two vessels, I'm very certain what the status are. The issue, Honorable Chairperson, which was raised, we don't have a report or a letter or any communication from the public protector that says any of the current bidders must be excluded from bidding. Now, whoever informed the media might have their own sources, but the official letter which I have here in front of me, sent to the minister, was informing us that today, the 15th, the public protector will release a report on findings of the process of the previous tender. Nothing to do with the current tendering process. So I hope I make myself clear, because I don't want to be misunderstood. We have nothing formal that we from the public protector to say you must exclude this company from bidding. All that we were requested to say, before you proceed with the process, just wait for my report. Maybe there's some guidance in that report how we should do the process in the current situation. The ballpark figure around the Honorable Chairperson, around the repairs, we are informed by the service provider, and I don't want to be quoted again and say no, you've lied in this meeting. They are waiting for another specific quote, then they will give us the 100% figure what it will cost, because I've taken your advice last time to say you go sit with that service providers and tell them they must give you in writing what will each of these things cost. Now, it's not like building a house, yeah? Repairing a vessel, which have complicated all kinds of different things that must be repaired, which you don't see even if you inspect the vessel for days. There are some things that you can't find that are wrong. So we have given them a deadline till Friday, tomorrow, to tell us exactly what will it cost and how long will it take for the rest of the vessels. You see, I don't write. I can't even read my own handwriting. So the issue about the oil spill, I hope we are clarified around that matter. It must not be presented that it's a dereliction of our duty. No, it is not. I want Honorable Chairperson, I want to contest the mandate to deal with those things, our DIA and with SAMHSA. We are a support function to deal with oil spills. And if there's alternative that must be found, if our vessels are not available, that alternatives must be found by the Department of Environmental Affairs. Coming to the forms, Now, you see, we are in a no-win situation. We can reduce the forms from 30 pages to 7 pages and people will not be happy. We have, and I want to clarify, we have translated the forms in the four languages, but people cannot apply it. You will be explained in your language wherever you stay, in Afrikaans, isiXhosa, isiZulu, and in English. What is the issues on that form? But the application of the form will be in English. That is what we have consulted. We had, just also to respond to the issue about the public participation. You see, honorable members, I'm the first one that would be very happy if you come and assist us in these processes. But it's not fair, honorable chairperson, when some honorable members come and ambush our meetings. As a servant of the public myself, I also have rights. And we are subservient to you as a legislature. But it's not fair to abuse my officials in a public meeting where honorable members have more opportunities than any of those ordinary people which we are trying to reach out to. Our consultation meetings are primarily, you can call us whenever you want to, and we will be there. These meetings, these public meetings that we are calling, is exactly to explain to the people that are in the fishing industry what are the issues. But we find that some honorable members come to those meetings not to come and assist and help, but to come and abuse my officials. That is not fair, and that cannot be right. I hope, honorable member Mbanga, I've explained your question about what is wrong with this Victorian thing and Route First. There's nothing wrong with them anymore. Honorable Chairperson, your question about the forms again. Look, we've spoken after your phone call about and we are taking the advice that you are giving to us with the humility that we have. When you say to us, look, these people in PE, they don't understand, or in Eland's Bay, or in Kofimbaba, or in Kosi Bay, they don't understand what you mean by some of the things in that form. Our team there, if they don't understand the issue that is raised, because some of the issues that you raised is the issue about which was in the form, can people, other people come and fetch the forms for people? Now, we only allow that in very strict conditions, because that is where the fronting begins. If you are not coming to face, some people don't have time or the ability, but then we say, you bring a letter. If Desmond wants to apply for a right, Desmond must give this person the authority to come and fetch that form. So you can't say, no, I'm coming, like, I don't know, Mr. Van Dalen, if you are going to apply for the right. Honorable Member Van Dalen, sorry, my apologies. Because you were supposed to come with a letter, I must in fact now speak to my officials for giving you a form which is now on the system, and I'm not sure if you're going to apply for the rights, because that will make our system not work, because that reference number will be missing now if you are not applying for that right. Chairperson, the transgressors, in our policies, we are very clear, if you have transgressed any of these rights, your previous rights, our system, there are multiple ways that we can pick up. Even if you now try to reinvent yourself and change from this one company.
Can we be orderly in a meeting? Because we really are here doing a very serious job. Now, if you are going to be scannering and making noise and, you know, it's not going to assist us. If we do that, we can easily be doing it outside of a room where we are seated. If you don't mind. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. The issue about, as I said, the issue about the transgressors is that on our own system, our own information, there are people who have been Section 28. Some people who have never utilized their rights. They were given rights in 2005. They've never utilized those rights. We have issued all of them with Section 28 notices. We, through this independent verification team, one of the key mandates is to go and find and investigate and ensure that those people that had rights before were transgressed and now try to reinvent them to a new process, that they were found and they will be disqualified. Our policies also talks about this thing. The issue about is there a deliberate issue about the Western Cape? Chair, we, as we've expressed before, we are a national competence. It so happens that some of these aquaculture, marine aquaculture projects, which are primarily privately driven, are majority based in the Western Cape for now. However, the intention is our inland fisheries and aquaculture to spread it across not only to the coastal provinces but across the country. And with the approval of the National Aquaculture Framework by Cabinet, that empowers us to do that. Of course, there's always a challenge of resources. I hope I've been able to address all of these issues that was raised. Yeah, okay. Sue just reminded me. The issue about the closing date on the application form. In our policies and in our advertising process, we have been very clear. You see, the reason why we have split, we could have had one process where we just say, you come and pick up the form, that's the closing date. But because we understand and we know the difficulties that some of our fishing communities experience, we've split the process up into getting the form, giving you time before you submit the form, and giving you opportunity to even engage with us again from Monday, 16th is the deadline, from Monday until the 2nd of, until the 13th of September, when you must submit your forms. So, we, in our view, this is a more user-friendly approach to say you don't only make a one linear approach, but you split it up where people have time to understand, be explained the forms and so on, and also make up their minds of which sectors they can apply for. The one thing I must clarify, Honorable Chairperson, to allocate these rights, we don't have to amend the MRA. I'm talking about these sector rights. You must now listen very carefully because, you know, we are dealing with a battle of confusion of our people by people that are very mischievous. These of allocating these 8 rights sectors has nothing to do to change the MLRA. There's one small minor point there where we have said in the application forms around the entity. Now, if the MRA doesn't get approved through Parliament, we can still allocate these rights. The MLRA amendment, 5 or 6 of them, have one purpose, is to empower the minister to give full rights to small-scale fishers. I hope honorable members understand that that is not in this process of the commercial competitive process where zonke everyone can apply. We don't have to amend. The MRA empowers the minister already to do that. In 2011, the cabinet approved the small-scale fishery policy. I think I've explained it last time. Because I want you to become imbongis of this process, to help us to explain this process to people. There are 7,333 people now, small-scale fishers, who don't have rights but exemptions. And they are the majority of them, honorable chairperson, is not in the Western Cape. So that is also a fallacy. 4,400 of them are in the Eastern Cape, 1,400 is in KZN, 81 is in the Northern Cape, and 1,400 is here in the Western Cape. So those people don't have rights. They have annual permits, exemptions that we give to them. Now to give them full rights, we have to amend the MRA. But the commercial side doesn't have to be impacted on that. So we continue on this road, MRA amended or not, we can still allocate these rights on these 8 sectors. The only small another thing that is changed in our application process is that said we've added the form of right holder. It was a person, a CC, a company, Pty Limited, and we've added a cooperative. Now, if MRA doesn't get amended, we withdraw the issue about the cooperative. But we are very confident and we appeal to yourselves. Cabinet has approved the proposed amendments. And we can proudly say today, those amendments that are there, we have canvassed industry, big and small, scientists, broadly we've canvassed for those amendments to make it non-confrontational, non-controversial, but just to give us a legal basis to assist those 7,333 and even more officers to get full rights. The cost of the new, the last question, which was this cost of the new tender contract. Now we can't, there's a tender process. We can't say the cost, the tender will cost so much because people have tendered. There are tender prices. But the management cost of us doing the issues about the vessels is about 180 million rand per year. So we have those are things that is not secrets. It's in our annual reports and so on. But those companies that have bid for this, they probably know that also. So the price which gets branded around, we receive a budget of 180 million rand from Treasury to manage our vessels per year. I hope I've answered all the questions.
Well, what I'll propose we do, members, when that amendment comes through, we commission our parliamentary legal team to
to look at the specific area that you're raising, Mr. Van Dalen. Oh, this is also one of my questions that I've persistently asked the department as to whether if you were to run a parallel process, can there be any, you know, legal, if you like, comebacks? Because you shall have been applying on the current principal legislation that we have, and not on the basis of future legislation. I think we should get a legal opinion from our parliamentary legal team on the specific one.
Can I just on that point? We have utilized, and also I received an email from a very famous fishery consultant about this thing. But we've utilized all of the best legal minds in the fishing industry around this matter. Even those ones that were before, in the previous process. We have also contracted the University of Pretoria, Professor Nico Olivier, and our own legal mind. So we are quite willing to work with your legal team so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Okay. Let's do the second one. So Mr. Panga, Mr. Steyn, Mr. Van Dalen, in that order.
Chair, the first thing I think I must put it very clear is that it is incorrect that we do not have our interest is more or less in making sure that this vessel sail. I think that statement, you see, it's unfortunate that it has been said that the officials have. If the officials had more interest, Maynard, I think, because you sometime you are not here, if they have more interest about this, I've been keen in raising this issue myself, even raised this issue to the president. We have raised, Mr. I still even remember Mr. Abrams here and the chairperson making very clear that we have blamed you, the officials, into the failure of protecting our marine environment. You can't tell us here that today you have more interest than us. That's a taboo. It's you guys, it's you who are making these vessels not safe on behalf of the nation. Now you tell us as if you are doing better for 2 or 3 years of these marine vessels not sailing. Now that statement is unfortunate, Chairperson. I can't take it from the representative of the department because it's their responsibility. We've monitored them, we've raised this issue. They were duck and diving on this matter for quite a long time. Even today, some of their responses here, not responding to this thing. Unless I can't read, man, myself, man. I need to be helped. Because now what I'm using the notes that are written here. When I speak about engines, I read the Lilian Kuruwayo. I've been reading this thing yesterday. Engine service has been outstanding since April 2012 when vessels was handed over to SA Navy. SAN commenced with the engine services in January, awaiting overhaul engines to be delivered from MTU. This is a co-managed activity. Target date for MTU engines to be installed end August. Target operational date end September. Now, to me, if you say no engine problems, but I've been reading, explain to me, what is it that I don't understand? Yeah, like, because this thing to me, like, with my Kwazakhele high school education in location, talks about an engine that is not ready, whether in service or in installed. But the operational date of it is end of September. In Ruthfest, Victoria, and Victoria Mkwane, main engine services to be carried for both port and starboard engines. What is that? Estimated operational date, 23rd August and so on. Because for me, there's something that does not gel, that does not talk to my mind, my narrow mind of KwaZakhele High School. It does not talk to me. The other question that you have not responded to, I've been seeing, like, listening, the passion is good, but the other question, what impact, to me that question, the absence of these marine vessels, they have made, both negative or positive, I think it's negative, there's no positive about it, I'm definitely sure, to the life of the marine environment, both into making adequate research for the past years that we have. Patrol, what is it that these, the absence of the have done to the country? Nobody have come to report to us in relation to that. But let me come to my follow-up question, because these ones, Chair, they have not been responded adequately. They are the first ones. Let me go to the second bite. By the look of things, I'm a South African. So people should understand. I think many should understand one thing. I think you should understand. There's a code of conduct for members of parliament. We understand well aware of that. But we have a constituency responsibility. I can go to any meeting that I want as a member of who represents South Africans. We are only 400, if I'm correct, here in this country. It's just a temporal privilege, Chairperson, that South Africans give us for that period of time. It's not a lifetime, but we serve them. We can go anywhere. I can go to Darf. For instance, after now, these dates, I'll go to you myself. Now I'm going to go to you now. I'm going to monitor you on these things because we can't wait for a committee meeting anymore now, Chair. On these things. I think the gentleman have put his neck here on the block. We must monitor him. I think we must go to him. But what is the status okay. Let's talk about African. What is very clear, the African vessel is a deep state. It's going to be very costly for the state. Are there plans to escalate? I've been asking this question. The minister, even in the National Assembly, to escalate the fact that this need an intervention by the state to replace this African. Not only this African, I'm looking at overall. I'm not talking about the arms deal, man. But we must not be scared to talk about the possibility of the state at the level of the government, level of cabinet, to look into possibilities. They plan to look at the possibility to replace some of these vessels. What is the status of the small-scale fisheries implementation plan? And will you be briefed about the status of this as a committee? And if when? How will this year's fishing rights allocation accommodate the small-scale fishing policy, and what will happen to the interim relief program? When will the marine living resources amendment? I think it's still not our responsibility. Just in the program, Chair. You will help me of our committee, as I think we discussed that we need to. But when is it that they will make a presentation in relation to that in terms of the amendment? I still remember that our last committee meeting, when we were dealing with the feeds bill, we said we want to prioritize this. But when are we really going to receive a presentation? To the committee. And I want to appeal to you, Chair, that I think the officials, when they're responding to us, they must treat us with an honorable respect. This is the Parliament of South Africa. I'm not Ngababanga. I represent South Africans. I think the tone must not be lectured here. as if we do not understand some of these things. I think the tone of respect of this house, it should go down a little bit. Thank you.
Mrs. Steyn, followed by Mr. Van Dalen, noted. Mr. Abram.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I will start with some of the replies and have follow-up questions on that first. My first one is still on those vessels, Chair. I understand the new requirements maybe from SAMHSA. I can also understand, that's why I asked in the first, do the people still need to get training, that kind of thing. I understand all of this. If you put me on a boat now and tell me I must go and rescue or do something, I will be totally useless because I don't have training. So it's not that we are insensitive. My question also was, do you have a plan B in place? Let me reframe. Who else have vessels? Is it only these vessels that lies with the Department of Agriculture, not the environmental? They are sitting with your department, as I understand it, in your hands. They have not been operational now for I don't know how long, years, at least 1 year. Who else have these vessels? What happens if no one go and look after the oil spill? Because I know there's a problem with, it lies in the, actually in the hands of environment, but the ships are in your hands. Specifically asked the question, you could make a plan regarding the research, plan B, the public, the private sector assisted. Why is there no plan B for this? Is there no trained people in South Africa that you can put on the ship, if the ships are ready, and then send them to go and assist there? That's my question. Why do we have to wait for these people that now have to go onto the ship to be trained? And why were they not trained if the deadline was 9 August? Why were they not trained in last month? Why do we have to wait until now? Now the ships are ready and they are not trained yet. That's my question. Do we plan properly? Chair, can we also ask that the members on that side don't shake their heads while we are talking? If we don't have to Skinner here, I'm also being put off by this happening from that side if we speak. No, they will know. I need to understand, Chair. I really don't understand how our waters are unprotected. Unprotected, it is. It's not that it's not unprotected, it is. There is no boat there, as far as I know. I don't even know if the ship... the ship could be moved today and rescued, or what is happening. The point is, this department could not do the job. The job was to provide the vessels. That is how I understand it. Maybe I understand it wrongly. Then, so on that. Then, Chairperson, I'm even more confused about the answer on the application. So this now answers the question why someone then, even if the question is easy then, in your words, I don't think it's so easy. I would take some trouble to fill this in. Why people then need to go to someone to help them to fill it in? Because, Chair, if it's not your first language and you don't understand it, even if it's an easy question, properly, and your life depends on it, you will then go to someone to assist you to fill it in. Why was the documents then not printed in the four languages? The application. So that it makes it easier for the people. What is the reason for that? I'm also concerned, Chair, it seems like this is a state secret. I can understand the difficulty with fronting and people filling in on the behalf of others and doing what kinds of others. But why can't I not go and get a form and see if I am interested in this? Why is it a problem if someone gets a form? If I can just understand that section. It's fine. if you have your own way of keeping records, if there's a database that you have to fill in and whatever, but if there's a form missing now and it's a problem, then I don't understand that side. Chair, I'm still also not covered on the fact that there's no date on there. How was it explained to people that they must now bring back on this specific date if they're not in there? Was it explained at the letter in there? How was that explained? I also did not get the answer on the 2 weeks basically time frame of when people need to get it, give it back. Do they still personally have to go? So it now would mean, Chair, and there was a, this clock is started ringing again, because most of the people don't live near the coastal areas, the areas where they can take it back. So if they had to move to a certain point to go and collect it, now they have to go back. Now in that time frame, they have to go back and hand it in again themselves personally. It is a massive cost to people to do that. What process is in place for someone else to take the documents back on their behalf? Then, Chair, I want to support you on our own legal opinion on this MRLA and the two processes that's happening together, because I'm listening to this small Nyana. Obviously, the DDG, actor DDG, hasn't heard us sitting here straying about may or must for days on a legal thing. So small Nyana is not so small Nyana if it's making a massive difference sometimes. So I would support you, Chair, that we get our own legal advice on that. And then, Chairperson, I will move to something new, which is the section on the aquaculture. Chair, and I was reading this with interest, I must say. And just yesterday, we said that last time we asked for a full list of where all these projects are. And it's not that we want the private ones. We want to see the ones that says here, of the 31 farms, 4 are government-funded farms and are fully operational. More farms will get government support, what. There's a whole lot of things here. And I was just amazed to see that we did go on our oversight to the Free State, and we visited some farms. Unfortunately, on that I couldn't go with the portfolio, but there were farms in the Free State that were aquaculture farms. There's nothing in the from the Free State in this list. So what is those places that we visited then? Is it something that's not on your list? Is it something that you're not looking at? And then just while we are on that, Chair, I would also like to hear the acting DDG speak about the Gariep Dam fish hatchery. Because my information was that that hatchery was built for tilapia. We were now told, no, that they are now going to fish there with, or hatch, what is it, goede karp, what is it, barbel, is it barbel? Catfish. I want to find out, is the agreement signed between the Chinese government and the South African government for the handover of that building that's been standing there now for 18 months? What is that it going to be used for, and when is that going to happen? Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure and come back on an issue that said that the mandate is with DEA to fight the oil. We all understand that, and SAMHSA is also responsible to make sure that this oil slick is fought. But you are saying that these ships are now in the harbor because of SAMHSA, and if SAMHSA would say, well, it's the department's fault, they are lying. That's what you are saying now today. Just clear that up for me. And then you will say... Then we will ask you, if you get the figures on Friday, will you share that with the committee, because you don't have that today, so you can write us an email with the
to the secretary and just share that amount with us, what the ballpark figure is. If you get it on Friday afternoon, close of business, I would appreciate it. You talk generally about members of parliament going to meetings and that they abuse your staff. I call it oversight. And if I call it rigorous oversight, that's what I will call it. You call it abuse. I'm wondering, and maybe you can clear it up for you. Are you suggesting that the member of parliament is not allowed to go to any public participation meetings? And that we are, you must remember that we as members of parliament represent the electorate outside there, which is the fishermen and everybody else. And we have to make sure that processes are followed, because that's what we do. We have an oversight role and we represent them. How can we talk for them if we don't know what they are going through every day? So if I go and stand in the queue and I go and collect forms, which I may or may not apply for, I may decide to resign from Parliament and take up fishing because it's a lucrative business. You cannot decide beforehand for me if I can apply or not. Who do you think you are to decide for me that I cannot go and apply for fishing rights if I want to? I'm a South African citizen just like anybody else. I also have rights. Okay, so I hope you understand that.
Yeah.
And then I would like to say, to talk about the legislative review process of the MLRA and the general policy on the allocation and management of fishing rights. That is what is in front of Parliament, or that we have heard had come through Cabinet. We haven't seen any proof of that. And that bill must now be passed through Parliament as a matter of urgency. Now, if there's only one little shawl in Jana needing to be changed, why are you wasting our time that we have to now have extra sittings to accommodate you for a small little wasteful thing, you know? So I think you are wasting our time if it's really so little. I think you are downplaying that. I don't know for which reason. This Parliament and the NDP, this Parliament on the 16th of June, this committee has said that we should try and move away from closed corporations and fishing corporations. That was a recommendation from this committee, which was endorsed by Parliament. And then the NDP also said that the answer is not closed corporations, and we all know that in South Africa we all don't work too well together. There are big fat cats that will make a lot of money in the end, and the small people that had to benefit from them before and those processes were in place, they've never benefited. They're still poor out there. Why have that not changed their lives? We have tried it before. It didn't work. Why are you so adamant on following that process? And why do you think you know better than Parliament and this committee to follow that? And then think you are going to waste our time with a small little amendment to the MLRA to push it through. We will have a big fight on that. And then I just wanted to add another... On the fishing harbors, you have said that you have admitted to us that due to the mismanagement of the harbors, there is no, and I want to quote you, the lack of qualified harbor masters in all harbors, severe human resource shortages resulting in crisis management, insufficient management supervisory staff, and effective service delivery, aging workforce with no skill retention. And then you look at the Constitution, Section 4B, which gives the right, actually, or the mandate for fishing harbors to local government. And I would think at the moment that local government would be best placed to look at them. But you don't want to hand over the control of these harbors to local government. And I wonder why. Why would you want to do that? These harbors are central to the economy of the place where they are at, and around these harbors, the poor are living, and the fishermen that need access to them. But these harbors are also used for criminal activities. What now happens is that people, they steal perlemoen, they dry it, they put it on a ship through these harbors that are not being controlled, then that ship goes further out to a bigger ship, and then to a bigger mainline carrier outside, and that perlemoen is traded for drugs, cocaine and heroin. And then that same process is followed back, and it comes back into the small fishing harbors, of which you have no control. There's no management in place, no harbor master, and our poor are suffering with drugs. And you say, maybe you say, well, it's not our problem. Maybe that's your argument on everything, the same as the minister. It's not my problem. I wash my hands on anything. But it's our responsibility as a committee to ask you those questions and to get your answers on it, because we would want to know that. And so, Honorable Chairperson, I would like to support you on the effort that you have said that we should come together and get a national disaster plan going for any thing that might happen from the seaside. At the moment, we don't have anything. I mean, ships can run across anywhere from all over the world and beach on our coast, and we don't even know how to handle it, or our ships are not even there. These ships are lying out in the bay here in Cape Town. When you ask something from SAMHSA, who are these ships belonging to? They can't tell you who half those ships are. Even the Harbour Port Authority can't tell you which ships are lying outside here. They don't know. The people just come here, they put down the anchor, and they refuse to answer their radio. No ship is going out to ask them who they are. So it's a massive threat to this country. Those people might be bringing in the drugs into this country, and small little rubber ducks might be picking it up, but we don't know. So I would suggest that we get together a something like a coast guard. You know, take the ships away from this department and get an entity that with the police, with the navy, with all the other role players, we can protect our coast. I mean, other countries have coast guards. We are not a third world country that can't have a coast guard. We can have it. And I think we should have a national disaster plan for any disaster that happens from the seaside, and maybe look at creating a coast guard for South Africa. Thank you.
We allow Mr. Abram, and then you come next.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, there's something that's beginning to bother one. I think the officials must accept that Parliament has a responsibility. Parliament approves budgets. Its job is to see that those budgets are spent in the best interests of the community, and that they are in line with the strat plans of the departments. We cannot have a situation where 51% of strat plan targets are achieved and 98% of the budget is, for example, spent. So if there is going to be rigorous oversight, I want to make it clear, I want favors from nobody. If I want something, I'll go and buy it. I'll pay for it. If I'm entitled to it, I must get it. I don't want favors. I am not here to be a sweetheart. We are here to see that the vulnerable people of this country are serviced and that they are treated properly. That is our duty. And if we can't do that, then at least we must not hurt them. And if we can't do that, we shouldn't be here at all. Let's get that very straight. Nobody's going to tell me that I cannot go to a police station, for example, unannounced. I'm not going to tell them beforehand that there's an honorable member of parliament coming. You must roll out the red carpet. I want to see what job they are doing there. I want to see whether they're not sleeping on duty. I'm going to pitch in there, and of course I'm going to interact with them. I'm not a rude person, so I don't want to be told here that when we have interactions with a department, that we abuse them. I'm not going to be told here that I cannot go to a department to go and pick up a form so that I know how my fellow beings have to live with that kind of information that is short. I mean, it's our duty as public representatives to do that. And I want to ask the officials, let's get this arrogance out of us. We are primarily there to serve the people of this country. That's our prime purpose. And I have come across too much arrogance. And that arrogance must end. Otherwise, you are taking us down the tubes. Sometimes I don't blame you because you did not have adequate leadership over the last 4.5 years with the 8, according to the press, director general being appointed. I don't blame you. But please, let us change. Let's bring humanity into the work that we do. Daily we get phone calls here. The other day a lady from Hout Bay calls me and says that we can't get these forms. They're difficult to get. They don't want to give it to us and all sorts of things. We are here to see that that kind of thing does not take place. Now, Chairperson, you see, regarding this whole issue of the research and patrol vehicles to get them operational as soon as possible. We understood that the department contracted Nautic South Africa for a period of 6 months. And that there is also another contract, I think, with Damien Shipyards. And these contracts are due to expire at the end of September or October. We were told at that time that's dependent on whether the contracts become effective in either April or May, which would give it a six-month period. Now, during a committee meeting in February 2013, the then Deputy Director General for Fisheries, Mrs. Appelgren Narkedin, informed this committee that the tender process of appointing a long-term service provider was underway and that it was expected to be concluded by July or August 2013. Now, if it was concluded by the end of July, please tell us. We are now exactly more or less in the middle of August. Tell us, where does that situation now stand? I don't want to go to the state of readiness of the various vessels, but I want to remind the acting Deputy Director General for Fisheries that on the 11th of June, he reported to this committee. And there were various time frames and dates and things given. We've heard today that some of these vessels are ready to set sail, but that there's no certificate of seaworthiness. Now, Chairperson, you know, very many years ago, I went to a roadworthy center. At that time, it was still run by the municipality, by the licensing department. And the guy got under the car and he asked me to switch on lights and indicators and all sorts of things. And I was given a certificate. And 2 days later, the brakes failed. Likewise, Chair, isn't this business of not being able to set sail because we don't have a certificate of fitness for seaworthiness, isn't it merely a smokescreen? If you have spent millions of rands, unless you got a backyard guy to do it, but naturally you cannot have a backyard guy working on a vessel. If you have spent millions, that vessel should be ready to set sail. You can have a certificate of seaworthiness and still pick up a problem a week or two down the line. So, I mean, it doesn't make any sense that it cannot go out to sea because we don't have the certificate of seaworthiness. Now, my question, Chair, is who must test that vessel to give you that certificate of seaworthiness? The people that worked on it should have been qualified people to work on a vessel. And if they tell you that we've done everything and they've given you a bill and you've got to settle the bill, that, to my mind, should be sufficient proof that that particular vessel should be able to set sail. So please explain that to us. Chairperson, the other issue here is that you have, for example, spoken about the 12 proclaimed fishing harbors. The Honorable Van Dalen also referred to it and its role in the economy of those outlying areas along our coast. Our problem, Chair, is that many of these harbors, just like many of our railway stations, they don't exist anymore. They've been carried away, even the railway lines. On a daily basis where I pass at a certain place, I see that, that today you see a couple of tracks all loose, railway rails, and so is the condition of many of these harbors. Do we have a budget, an infrastructure budget, to see that they are upgraded, or at least that some of them are upgraded, and that you have a time frame for the upgrading of the others? Because if you want those places to be the hub of activity, and they need to look like hubs of activity. Now you say that the you have the aquaculture development and enhancement program at DTI. They have one. Now since you are responsible for fisheries per se, this department, can you tell us how many fishermen and fishing companies have been assisted through that program by DTI? Again, you see the chairperson referred earlier to the fact that we need to have a sort of cohesion of the various sectors that are involved, or he spoke on another about another issue, but the same applies. And if there is that kind of activity in the country, we should know how many people have been assisted, and that your department should be in the forefront of having that kind of information. Chairperson, the whole issue of these vessels again. Mr. Banga, the Honorable Banga, referred to the Africana. Now it is common knowledge from what the reports that we've had that the Africana is in an advanced stage of disrepair. Now you then look at two issues, Chair. You look at the costs of refurbishing it, and you look at the cost of replacing it, and you try to take the best decision. Have you done that? Have you got anything that you can tell us that you have done that tells you which way to go? Chairperson, the other issue is we must remember that we want to assist our small-scale fishers. We want to see that they grow into enterprises one day. The word impossible should not be in our vocabulary. But in order to do that, Chair, you must also remember that constantly it is reported that thousands of jobs are being shed along the coastline in the fishing sector. Are we taking account of the role of the commercial sector, and how you could, on the one hand, you know, in my language, they say that if you want to kill the snake, you must see that you don't break the stick in the process. So if you want to develop our poorer people into bigger time fishers, you also look at the possibility that we don't shed too many jobs. Have you looked at creating that balance? Have you got any information for us telling us how that can be achieved? Chairperson, as far as the bill is concerned, what I would like to know is specifics. Yes, we were told by the acting deputy director general that the cabinet has apparently approved of the bill. Now, do they have a timeline, Chair? And I'm asking this question specifically that if you want some or other legislation to pass through Parliament before the end of this year, remember, we are now, forget August, it's almost done. You've got September and October. November, activity starts scaling down. But I don't mind, Chairperson, coming here even on Christmas Day to pass it. I don't mind. But the question is, Chairperson, that the machinery of Parliament comes at a standstill. So we need to know specifically, when is that bill going to be tabled? And I think some members have already asked whether there will be the possibility that the bill will be placed or brought before the committee, that you should bring it before the committee even before it's tabled, so that we become au fait with it and start preparing and planning. And the final one for this round, Chairperson, would be that the small scale fishing policy. Do you have plans of its implementation with timelines? And if you have it, all we know is that by the end of year, you will have this whole issue of applications sorted out. But the implementation of that plan. I mean, it's one thing to ask people to apply for rights. It is quite another to implement it. When is your plan to put it into an implementation phase? Thank you, Chair.
You see, that's what happens when your elder talks. You don't stop your elder.
He stops himself.
It is despite the fact that some of the questions the elder shall have raised shall have been responded to earlier, before the elder came. Mr. Kwele?
Thanks, Chairperson. Can you allow me to enter out here and request you to give us a 15-minute break?
I'll do that immediately after your interjection. You are done. So you read my mind. Thank you. We shall then take that 15-minute break. Having listened to all, as I said, some of the questions have been asked and responded to, Mr. Abraham, especially the one on the tendering process and public protector having, written officially to the department, basically saying there is a process of an announcement of some investigation that took place, but the department shall, in summary, take charge of all of those issues. I think we should take that time from where I'm seated is 30 minutes after 11. If you can start at 11:45. Not come, but start at 11:45.